Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the podcast, Something to Believe In. I'm Steve, and this is the lovely Allie, and we're excited to be here today.
It is a beautiful, beautiful spring day.
It is a beautiful spring day.
That might go away tomorrow.
I know.
but we'll take it.
I think this time of year the weather's always possessed, Allie.
I know.
You kind of get excited, and you think, all right, I can finally go outside and do something warm, a warm activity, and then bam.
We're in Utah. That's what we get being in Utah.
You get that March, April snow shower.
That's right.
So I don't know what it's going to be.
Me neither. All I know is we got sunshine and March Madness, so I'm happy.
We do. Speaking of March Madness, did you watch some of the games last night?
Yes, I did.
What was your favorite upset?
Kentucky? 314. That is huge.
Well, unbelievable. Did you see that number three?
So good.
What a baller.
Yep.
And did you see when he grabbed the mic and he said, "We're not a Cinderella"?
So cute.
Kind of give me goosebumps.
Yeah, March is madness.
It is madness.
Magical. I did feel a little bit bad for BYU, I have to say.
Oh,
but
that's right.
They made history. I think it's been like 50 years since Duquesne's made it into the NCAA tournament.
Yes.
And so BYU finds a way to make history any way they can.
Did you know that I had to Google it, but Oakland, the Golden Grizzlies that beat Kentucky. So I had to Google that to find out where Oakland was. I thought it was Oakland, California. It's Michigan.
I did not know that.
The most intriguing part of the story to me was, or the upset, was the coach has coached that team for 40 years. And the guy that made the winning free throw to put them up by four was the son of a father that he coached 38 years ago.
Great story.
And he was in the stands taking pictures.
That is a great story.
It is a great story. The other takeaway to me that I really was pondering over was it used to be the one and done. So the college kid that would come out, not to go down a rabbit hole, but these young kids, I think that the NIL has changed some things in that. I'm not endorsing the NIL, but it's now kind of intriguing because it's not forcing, but it's inspiring or getting some of the players that would have left early to stay in college athletics, and they grow and mature.
Absolutely.
And they become better leaders.
Absolutely.
On their team. And what you saw in Oakland was an older team beat the younger team because they were experienced. And in their mind, they believed that they were the better team.
Well, that was the key. I mean, having been in March Madness and competed and coached in it, we always tell the players you have three seasons. You have preseason, you have the regular season, and then you have a fresh start going into the tournament. Everybody is 0-0. And if you can really believe that you deserve to be there and it's anybody's game, and people do, that's why it's magical.
Yep.
But I'm glad you brought that up because today really is about, besides spring in the house, new beginnings.
Yep.
Well, we have some new beginnings here.
We do. And for everybody that doesn't know, which hopefully everyone does, this is our new corporate headquarters. And what was really fascinating about this is when I knew we had to move, I was dreading it. My phone works so much better here. But not that
is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, it depends on the day.
Yeah.
But when you think of moving, it makes you anxious and you get anxiety because it's change. And it's like, oh my gosh, it's going to be a mess. So mentally you start thinking of all these things almost to sabotage the move.
Right.
It's like, oh, what if this doesn't go right? What if that doesn't go right? And I've got to clean all this crap and rehang pictures and redo all this. But what I really noticed in myself and watching others was it gave you the opportunity. I threw away so much stuff that I didn't even know I had in my office, and I just got rid of it. It was like a cluttering process, like a cleansing process, and it actually felt good.
Yeah. Get rid of stuff and make room.
But isn't that life?
It is.
I mean, think about it. As humans, we go out and we absorb so much stuff, whether it be new relationships, possessions, different things, and we just keep it and keep it and keep it, and it builds up. And is that healthy?
No. In fact, I started making a rule that if I was going to buy a clothing, I had to get rid of a clothing. And I'm like, but I like them all.
Yes.
So I guess I can't buy anything.
Right.
But that's horrible. I need a more simplified minimalistic mindset.
And my wife, and please don't ever repeat this, because I'll deny
secret.
It. But she is a pack rat, and she hoards things forever. And part of that was her growing up,
right?
You know, which is a different story for another day. But when I want to go clean out stuff, she gets, I mean, that leads to tense conversations,
you,
because she doesn't want to throw, she doesn't want to throw it away. And I want to like declutter and get rid of it because it makes me anxious. And so a lot of times when the argument starts, I'll get on my iPhone and play the theme song to Sanford. So I don't know if you ever watched that. I might be showing my age, but he was a collector of fine stuff and one of my favorite shows ever. So she gets really mad at me when I play that theme song.
Well, I think there's a lot of emotional attachment. And then, you know, there's that one shirt that you might need when you go camping.
Yeah, right.
And I know we can all relate. It's like, and I know I don't go camping, but I need it just in case.
But realistically, if you haven't used it in a year or even 2 years, whether that be anything in your life, is that something you really should be holding on to?
Well, I think that this is a great segue into who we brought on today, because a good friend of mine, his name's Hamish Stevens. He graduated BYU and got his master's at Stanford in art and creativity. And he is now a master of meditation. And he has an incredible story as to how he got into meditation. We'll let him share it. But everything he owns could fit inside a van. And he is the epitome of minimalistic simplicity, gratitude, and just giving of self. And so we thought he would be perfect to bring on today, partly because we all need to learn how to sit still for 5 minutes and to know what to think about, what not to think about. But Hamish, why don't you share with us, first, welcome, and why don't you share with us how you got into the meditation side of things and maybe the experience in your life that kind of led you that direction?
Yeah, thank you for the warm introduction. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah. What to say about the story of getting into meditation? What's coming up for me is just, yeah, gratitude. Like thinking back on all the times I've sat still and felt successful in that endeavor, and all the times that I've been frustrated in that same endeavor, realizing that it's all a journey, it's all a path. Probably about 2016, I got involved with an organization called Lower Lights. My spiritual teacher and sort of guru mentor, Thomas McConkie, had started gathering in Salt Lake City, and a friend had invited me to come meditate. And I did that sort of casually for a few years. But it wasn't until my best friend from childhood took his own life that I really found myself needing a new spiritual practice. I was on my way to graduate school at Stanford when Brett passed away. And it sort of changed everything I thought I knew about my life or the path that I was on. I was honored to speak at his funeral, which is a huge honor, but it's also a daunting task to speak at your best friend's funeral. You know, I wouldn't necessarily wish that on anybody. But it allowed me, I think, to process the situation and to be in a role of support for other people, which helped me get through it, honestly, to think less about myself and to think about others. But fast forward 6 months, I'm at Stanford and my bike got stolen. It was an old road bike I'd had for years. And that, of all things, that was like the straw that broke the camel's back. And a huge wave of grief caught up with me. I thought I had processed Brett's passing, but I really hadn't fully done so. So all this grief caught up with me and it just floored me. I didn't know how to cope with the regular stresses of life. I found myself sort of observing my life from another perspective. Like I was trapped in my own mind watching this person go about their daily life.
Wow.
And it was really difficult. And I started behaving strangely. Like I started, speaking of clothing, I got rid of everything I owned that wasn't black. Like I only wore black. And I started sleeping on the floor of my apartment. I also started sitting for long periods of stillness. I didn't think of it as meditation at the time, but when I reconnected with Thomas, my teacher, it became clear that that's what I was. It's almost like I was living like a monk without realizing what I was craving. I was craving stillness and space and emptiness and that decluttering that you spoke to. It's like my soul knew it needed that. And my body was acting it out before I cognitively understood what was going on. So really, to answer, it's a long way of answering your question, but I came to meditation deeply because I needed it, because I was suffering. But I don't think that's everyone's story, right? Like some of us just want to improve a little bit and want to have a freer mind. And I think any approach to a meditative or contemplative practice is a good one.
Don't you think though that we all hold on to stuff that creates behaviors that are uncharacteristic? Maybe, I mean, I think if you going through this grief, right, and then your bike gets stolen, and it's the past that really made this a bigger issue than what, I mean, it is a big issue, right? You feel violated, but you're still holding on to that grief, that anger, that unknown, and then it just makes this other situation worse, right?
Yeah.
Is that fair? Did that happen?
I think so. And I think what I feel you pointing to is just one of the biggest, maybe the biggest benefit I've gotten from my meditative practice is just training awareness or learning to pay attention to life, you know, and life defined broadly. Whatever happens, if I'm paying attention from a certain perspective, or if I'm able to shift that perspective, I can see that anything that happens to me, good or bad, is just sort of what happens.
Do you think that because most people don't, they're not where you're at. I mean, I'm a little jealous.
Maybe.
I think I'd be a better golfer.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
However, sometimes when you hold on to that clutter and those emotions and you don't free yourself from that, do you think it allows or it kind of dictates the decisions you make, right or wrong, moving forward?
Yeah, absolutely. It's like having something in your vision that you don't realize is blocking your vision, right? Okay. You're so close to it. You're so identified with your thoughts or your behaviors or your traumas that they obscure reality. They sort of cloud it in a way. It's like I often use the metaphor of like, if you imagine fishing, big fishing hooks in you that sort of have you, and it's like you can't act freely because you're hooked by all these different fishing lines, that cutting those lines, you start to let those things go, and you can be more free in the way you move about your life. But I think it does take training awareness and paying attention to what are the things that are holding me back or causing me suffering or in my way that I just need to get some distance from and be able to see them more objectively. I do this motion a lot because it's like the falling behind the display of, you know, we're going about our lives and we think everything is happening and that we're seeing it exactly as it is, when actually you can come from another place, you can sit from a different perspective and see that, oh, I was really identifying with a certain emotion in that situation. You know, a friend came to me and it triggered past memories, and then all of a sudden I'm in this story that I think is objective reality, when in fact there's so many perspectives to see something from that there's a lot of freeing that this practice has brought to me.
So this makes me think of so many things and so many questions.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So the last 2 years have been really crazy in our industry. And everybody has coped with it different. And some maybe we haven't coped at all. I'm like, why is my hair not growing? I don't get stressful. I don't show stress. I don't, but I manifest.
I've been living with that for years.
But yeah, I manifest it. You found an answer.
Yeah.
you manifest it, you know, those stressors different ways, and you don't even know what they are. I mean, yeah, you might be able on the day to day to still get through the day and communicate and be happy and enjoy life. But if you're not taking the time and having that awareness of what you need, then it's getting you somewhere. You know, it's getting under your skin. It's, you know, affecting you in some way emotionally, physically. You don't know. You see people that get pain in hips and different things because you just store this stress. And life is going to be stressful. We're going to have these times where it ebbs and flows. But I love what you're bringing to the table of awareness.
Yes.
And the education of how to take a step back and maybe give yourself a little bit of grace that we can't ignore that it's a hard time. We can't ignore that life sucks right now, or that this marriage is hard, or that, you know, I don't feel well. But what do I do with that? And if you just keep pushing, it doesn't get better. And so I think you have some amazing tools that could help us, because specifically in freeing space, I really like the decluttering. It kind of fits with the spring and coming into a new office. And it's a new year for us where we actually feel a light at the end of the tunnel is near, which we haven't felt for a while. So that's exciting and kind of gives hope. But, you know, there's also the meditation of gratitude that I think is equally important that you've talked about, and being able to marry the two. So that was a lot without a question. No, but
I'm anxious to get rid of the self-doubt hook.
Yeah.
I mean, your hook analogy,
yeah.
I'm going to dwell on that all weekend.
He's a fisherman.
I'm a fisherman, but that's a very good analogy, because you're just like being pulled in so many different directions, and you're not, I just don't feel like you're free, right? You're just trapped. And I think a lot of us have had a lot of self-doubt just from a business perspective, which leads to a personal perspective. And it's like, how do you free that? I mean, I have self-doubt on the golf course all the time, and I hate it. I hate it so much. It's like, how do I get to a place where it's like, who cares? Right?
Yeah. Yeah. To flip your analogy, I think golfing has made me a better meditator. Meditation will make you a better golfer, certainly. But it's interesting that you'd say that, because it's like, something in you, like you love to golf, it sounds like.
Oh yeah.
And there's probably a lot to that. And one thing I hear you saying is that, like, golf shows you something about yourself, right? It shows you an aspect of self-doubt that you'd rather relate to differently, right? And so right. And maybe I'm making a story out of
nothing. No, you're spot on. You're spot on.
But it's like, that's what awareness does for us. It allows us to see what we need in life, in the plainness, mundaneness of life, in our day-to-day, you know, coming to the office or playing golf or the relationships with our spouses or children or parents. All those things are going to demonstrate those hooks, because we're going to pull away from stuff. And the pain is actually pointing us to where we need healing, right? If I feel the pain in a certain way, if I feel the pain in the part of me that's self-doubt, awareness allows me to, like, notice that. Say, oh, you know, like, it's self-doubt. And already, like, I'm disidentifying. I'm not the self-doubt. I'm seeing the self-doubt from some other perspective, which then begs the question, well, who am I then? If I'm not my self-doubt that I thought I was, I'm now something else. I'm something larger, something that's potentially big enough to hold that self-doubt and to bring love and healing to it.
And why is it there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why is it there? So why don't you tell us your practice of meditation and maybe what you recommend for
rookies,
us, people like us.
I remember the first time that I meditated on my own. So not with this group downtown. It was like, okay, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to meditate. It was me and a friend, and neither of us really knew what we'd do. It almost felt mischievous, right? Like we were taking drugs or something. Like, okay, what do we do? How do we do this? You know? And we just use the Headspace app. There's loads of apps, Calm, Insight Timer. There's loads of brilliant apps. Hallows, like a Christian contemplative app. And we just sort of played the recording. It was a guided meditation, and it was, I think, you know, 5 or 10 minutes long, and that was it. And for me, it resonated. So I think there's loads of ways to start, and even as deep, you know, there's people who've been meditating far longer than I have. Like, my teachers are decades into this. There's always different techniques, different ways to approach it. One of the most simple things that's always with us, that when we do a little meditation together today, we'll use, is just the breath. And I love the breath because it's rhythmic. It's always happening, and it's kind of in the background, right? Like, we, not that often throughout the day do we stop and say, wow, I'm breathing, you know? Yes. But that's essentially what meditation is it's that shift of, like, we're going about our day, and then it's like, oh, breathing is happening, right? Some bigger perspective becomes aware that breathing is happening, and that's awareness. That's meditation. And my teacher Thomas will often say that, you know, meditation's always, we're always being meditated just by life itself. Life is the only meditation. It's just a matter of coming into a perspective where we're aware that meditation is happening. And so one of the big things is posture. And you can find a place in your office, in your home, even in your car, where you just become aware of, like, oh, how am I sitting? Am I, you know, am I leaned back? Am I leaned forward? Am I uncomfortable? Am I comfortable? A straight spine is super helpful because it keeps you both comfortable but alert. We don't want to fall asleep. I mean, we can fall asleep. That's just telling us that we're tired, you know? It's not meditation, but it's telling us something, right? So it is a meditation in a way. But a straight spine will keep us alert and attentive but comfortable. And then from there, with the breath, for example, we're setting an intention for the breath to be our object of meditation. And intention is huge. I can't emphasize intention enough. It's like having 10 horses pulling in different directions versus 10 horses pulling in the same direction. When we set an intention, it's like telling all those horses, and the horses are like our body, our mind, our emotions, you know, anything else that's in our vicinity, we're saying our intention is to focus on the breath. So that when our mind runs off, our body gets uncomfortable, which they will pretty immediately, in fact, we can come back to that set intention of, oh yeah, I'm watching the breath. For the next 5 minutes, 3 minutes, 2 minutes, we've decided, we being the different parts of ourselves,
yeah,
are going to watch the breath. And that allows us a place to return to. And so as our thoughts run off with themselves, as they're supposed to, right? Our minds are beautiful tools. Our minds are designed to think thoughts, and our bodies are designed to be in motion. And so being okay with those things happening is really what an intention does for us. It allows us to let them do their thing, and we just gently remind ourselves to realign with our intention, which in this case is watching the breath.
I think, you know, in this industry, as moms and dads, just busy, that we're not great at being still. And one of the things that, when we talked about meditation and being still, for you at 60 minutes in the morning, could be more than that in the evening. For us, if we can get 2 to 3 minutes of good practice in it and start it that way, I think there's such power in stillness and awareness. But you said something that I think really hit for me and maybe all of us in the industry, is just being present. And it creates an ability to be present. And, you know, oftentimes we just aren't great at that. You know, we're always thinking of what's next. And I think that's why when you get older, you feel like life goes by really fast, because as a kid, you live in the moment. And as an adult, you're always looking ahead at what's next and what you have to do. And you're never in the moment, you know, so life just passes by. I think that meditation is so valuable for just personal awareness and gratitude, as well as that stillness and calm that we have to intentionally bring into our lives and to be present.
So I'm going to be vulnerable here for a second, because you've got my full attention, which is really hard to do. 60 minutes in the morning and 60 minutes in the evening. Is that valid?
Yeah.
I can't sit still for 60 seconds. That's problem number one. Problem number two is I'm ADD so bad that,
yeah.
I mean, so let me back up.
Yeah.
I thought it'd be a great idea to help myself. I bought this ClearLink sauna and I've tried to go in and meditate and I'm in there for 30 seconds and then it's got speakers in there. So I Bluetooth Bon Jovi or something. And my wife's looking at me like, you are weird, right? Because I can't sit still.
Yeah.
I can't. I when you say your mind goes and that's okay, but what if it just goes like, it's gone, like a sports car. That's me.
Yeah.
How do I control that?
Great question. And I guess the answer is I have no idea.
Well, good. I don't feel so bad.
Yeah, I can offer some words, but like on some level, it's like asking yourself, what is your relationship to control? Right. Because even as you say that, it's like, well, I want to control it. And even right there, it's like it's a prior meditation to maybe what we want to be meditating about. It's like, well, why am I so interested in controlling my mind or my life or my circumstance? Like already we're deconstructing so much of our life. We're taking in sensory information, right? Through our senses. It's like constant. We're pulling it in. And we're making stories about that. And it's a beautiful thing that the human being does. What I love about meditation is that it's more deconstructive in nature. So we're pulling all these stories apart. And when the mind runs off, it may be, especially when you're starting out with meditation, it may be, maybe you get to the point where you're doing a 30-minute meditation. And from minute two until minute 28 or 29, you've been off thinking about something. But in minute 29, when you come back, be like, oh, I was supposed to be meditating. That already is a huge win. That's a huge step forward.
I think that is a loss.
Yeah. And so yeah.
That's good feedback.
Yeah. And that's essentially like, so this symbol on my hat, right? The yin and the yang, it's famous in the Taoist tradition. It's set up to illustrate a polarity or a paradox, and a win versus a loss. We tend to be more comfortable with the wins of life, yeah. Right? To me, this symbol represents something like finding that middle way where win and loss are both simply what they are. Like I heard, we've talked a little bit about basketball. I heard an interview with Kobe Bryant recently, the late great Kobe Bryant, where this interview was asking him, do you play to win or do you play to not lose? And I thought I knew where he was going because I've always associated playing to not lose. I thought that was a Kobe thing. I thought that was a Mamba mentality thing. And he pauses, he really catches himself in awareness and he says, neither. He says, if I play to not lose, I'll be motivated, but it's fear-based. And he says, if I play to win, it's the same fear, just disguised differently. I'm still playing to not lose. And he said, I play to learn, because then whatever happens in the moment, I can be exactly with it. It's not about winning or losing. It's about learning so that I can, you know, become something greater than what I already am. And so I guess that's what comes up for me as you bring up, like, it would be so hard to control my mind for 30 or 60 minutes. I agree. If I were to approach it as I'm going to control my mind, I think I would fail every time. So then the practice, and that's okay. The practice just becomes, what is failure to me? And why am I more comfortable with winning than I am with losing?
Man, I could talk to you for a long time. So I had this experience one time, and it's golf, and I don't mean to go back to this, but it was in a tournament. And I was playing against this guy that I should have never, I mean, we're not in the same category on paper, right? And it kind of freaked me out because after the second hole, everything seemed, it was weird in my mind. And you're going to think I'm weird. For people, this is, everybody's going to think I'm weird. But it almost creeped me out because everything just compressed in. And I felt like I was in this,
stop,
like this weirdest zone. And I played sports a lot. I've never had that experience in my life, and everything was going perfect. Everything. And I didn't have one bad thought. I just knew I was at peace with my body for nine holes. For nine holes, I was like, it was weird. And I remember coming back to the house, and my wife said, how did it go? And I said, I can only relate to Kobe Bryant. I'm like, I don't know what just happened to me. It was kind of scary. But it felt like what Kobe would always talk about, right? That you're in this, like, I felt like I was on a different planet. I've never experienced it again. I so bad want to get there, because it was like utopia. It was so good. But I can't get back there again.
Well, I do think meditation, visualization, you'll hear Michael Jordan, not to make this about sports, but Michael Jordan said, if everybody knew what I knew about visualization, meditation, they would also be in the zone all the time. And that's what separated him. But I like what you said, because whether we're talking about sports or life, you eliminate the win and loss, or you redefine them. And I think it also takes away the self-doubt. I think the self-doubt comes because of the pressure of winning. And if winning in your definition means being the best, then we're all going to fail. And we know we can't achieve that. So there's this self-doubt. Instead of teaching every opportunity as a chance to learn, requires the humility, which actually gives you confidence and strength. And I think you're so dang competitive that winning is the goal. Winning is first place. And you grow up with brothers you're competing with. But I think stepping back and redefining what winning is in different areas of life, the self-doubt is a part of it.
I agree with you, but I think even work-related or career-related, I think you touched on it. Playing not to fail, or living not to fail, is
redefining those.
Because we always think, well, gosh, I'm good at that, but man, I don't want to embarrass myself, or I don't want to look foolish, or I don't want to fail. And then we fail, right? Yeah. It just miserably. Instead of thinking, who cares if I fail? Who cares if that doesn't work out? Who cares if I don't get that deal? Who cares if that relationship chooses not to be a part of my life? Is that the end of the world? No, it's not.
And when you ask that question, is it you that care, or is it someone else in your life that you think cares? And so you're trying to live up to that. It's just can go deeper than that for sure. But I do think, for the sake of time,
I have like three more questions.
I love it. And thank you for being so open about it, because I think a lot of us can relate to things that you're talking about. So Hamish is going to take all of us through just a 5-minute, longest 5 minutes of our lives, meditation, and just to give us some education on something we could do in the morning or at night.
I can't wait.
He talked about, you know, we can be, they're interchangeable, but maybe decluttering in the morning, leaving space for things in your day, but also at night, having it be a gratitude meditation, but you can interchange them however you want, whatever your needs are. But we really appreciate, honestly, you taking the time to be here, and I love your perspective, you know, on everything. Girls, I wouldn't brought you on here, but you're awesome. And so if you're watching, just, and you can join along in this, no one will be looking at you with your eyes closed. So,
well, they're good. Looking at
just confidently participate.
Cool. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. This is not so cool. So I brought my little bell. It's just so I can sort of, I'll just ring this to kind of officially start the meditation. And then when I ring it again, you'll know we're done. So if you're scared about what we're about to get into, just listen for the bells. That'll be the start and the end.
So if you fall asleep, that wakes you up.
Yeah.
Posture.
Yes. There you go. First step is posture. So try and find a position where you're comfortable, but alert and attentive. And again, I think a straight spine is the best indicator of that. If you're sitting in a chair, usually it's like your back seat in the chair and then your 2 feet on the ground. That creates like a nice tripod to allow your spine to stay straight. Or like when I sit on the floor, I'll do the same thing with my knees as those other two touch points. And you're free to keep your eyes open if you want to take sort of a non-specific gaze slightly downward. I generally close my eyes just because it blocks out a lot of visual stimulus
distractions.
Yeah. And And I'll guide us. Yeah.
Question. Breathe. I already disclosed I'm ADD really bad.
Yeah.
So for me, you want me to focus on just breathing.
Yes. And I will offer some guidance as we meditate. Okay. So almost just follow along. Like it's like story time when you're in second grade. Okay. You just get to sit there and let the story take you where it takes
you. I mean, let's roll. Okay. Let's get this party started.
Okay. I hope these bells don't mess with the camera or the microphone. I think they do. So start just by taking a deep breath in, releasing. Do that a couple more times. In, out. One more. In, out. Then just allow your breathing to come back to normal. Notice already that we brought awareness to breathing. We weren't consciously thinking about the fact that we were breathing until we started this meditation. And now we're holding the process of breathing in our awareness. Simple way of saying that is to say to the self, breathing is happening. Just notice your breath. Watch it like you've never watched it before. Notice that the in-breath might feel different than the out-breath. Become curious about why that might be. You'll notice that paying attention to breathing doesn't block out all other stimulation. You might hear sounds, you might think thoughts, your body might be uncomfortable with such a straight spine. The process of meditation is just simply noticing those things, those thoughts, those distractions, allowing them to be exactly as they are. And then gently returning to paying attention to breathing. Again, the mind will wander. We'll think about what we had for breakfast or what we're going to have for lunch. Think about the tax deadline coming up. These aren't bad things. They're just thoughts. You can gently return to breathing. With this little bit of stability and momentum we've built up in our meditation so far, we can start to deepen a little bit. Noticing the fact that we're noticing. Breathing is simply happening. which would imply that we are not our breath. We're something that's aware of breathing happening. If this is at all confusing, or you feel like I'm not doing this meditation thing right, you can just notice that thought. And again, just return to breathing. And as you feel steady in the experience of breathing, move deeper into awareness of breathing.
Sing up. Oh, don't make me too.
Each in breath and out breath, we create space. We give ourselves a little bit of emptiness, a little bit of freedom, a little bit more nothing amidst all the something. We can rest here as long as we'd like. I'm going to ring the bells to conclude our formal meditation, but I want you to notice that after the bells ring, breathing, that is to say meditation, goes on happening regardless.
Thank you. I think just sitting still and breathing with nothing else, exhaling and letting go of different things in your life and using that exhale to free space. But that awareness I love, because you don't have to be doing anything specific, just being aware. So that's a good goal for us to focus on.
For sure.
But thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having
me. I have a tea time tomorrow at 10. Can you meet me at 9:30?
You did the parking lot.
That would be awesome. Oh, really? Thank you so much for sharing.
Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
For participating. Have an awesome weekend. Enjoy the sunshine.
Happy Easter.
Yes. Happy Easter.
Thanks. See you next month.